Rob, we need to open with a fess.
I really fancied the new girl in work. She wears band t-shirts and is clearly into rock and metal music. I lied and I said I was also into the same type of music, and she asked me who my favourite band was. I said Linkin Park instead of Linkin Park. She laughed at me for a solid 10 minutes.
I thought it was a little hint to hook up professionally. But best comment here is if you said Linkin Park, she probably still would have laughed at you.
Thanks, Steve May, for that. Have you ever said anything embarrassing to a lady, Dave?
No, because generally when the stakes are that high, I'm too embarrassed to actually say anything at all. What I have done is been sort of chatting to this girl that I quite fancied. She was like a designer. And it was going really well. So I was sort of gesticulating as I was talking, and I knocked an entire pint of ice-cold cider all over her. It's so rare that I actually have any kind of game that I continue trying to chat her up. It's like apologising as well, but, you know.
Oh, God, and she was, like, just covered in booze. And was she going, I'm covered in booze now, Dave. Can you please just help or stop?
I obviously went and got a cloth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was clearly a mood killer.
It completely, I was like, you know, why I said, like, have you got any stories about saying embarrassing to a lady? It was because I dredged my memory and I've got no stories in my head about saying something embarrassing to a lady. It's mainly because I've never spoken to any ladies.
Spoken to a lady? No, that's genuinely the thing, though. I'm just very, very shy. And so it would rely very much on, yeah.
Yeah, I've got like cringy moments. Like, for some reason, I've got this recurring cringe in my head. Well, I've stopped cringing about it now, but I cringed about it for so long when my dad had this friend who was also an electrician. And then he came round one time to do something with the lights, and he said, "Oh right, oh, who are you then?" And I said, "I'm the electrics one."
Oh
right, because at the time I was like well into making little kind of circuits with bulbs and batteries and resistors and stuff, and I thought my dad maybe had told him, and like obviously no. And it was just this blank look, and like I just felt like I was going to die. I described myself as the electrics one.
Just, I remember saying things like that when I was that age, just being like, yeah. Oh. And then afterwards just being like, oh, why did I do that?
For the next 10 years, it just sort of
the
like
next
getting,
30
you're walking
years.
Down the street and suddenly you stop dead and remember at the time you said, I'm the electrics one. But I wasn't trying to make him have sex with me. Yeah. Maybe if I just said that, it would have worked.
I see, if you say that to a girl, it really works. This is Fessel. Cue the Jinglist Massive.
Welcome to the Fessel podcast, where Rob Manuel and David Stevenson take this week's most terrible confessions and cringe at the horror of it all. I'm Rob Manuel, and I've been running this Fessel account for 5 years.
And I'm David Stevenson, and I get dragged into Rob's projects regardless of whether I want to or not.
And we've been friends since 1980.
Regardless of whether I want to or not.
You're going
to
be my friend forever, Dave, my friend forever. We're going to be on an old man bench, spitting at young people, going, I remember being young like you. And you're going to be there, Dave, going, stop it, Rob, you're not allowed to spit. And I go, you need to spit at them too, Dave, to be in the club. Our producer tells us we need to not spit at children and that we need to instead encourage listeners to subscribe, rate and review wherever they get their podcasts.
So do it. I'm encouraging you. You can do it. You can do it.
You can like, you can click the little like button, make the little heart go up.
Press the bell, the little bell. Is that still a thing?
You can write reviews on TripAdvisor if that's a thing for people to review podcasts on.
I think they actually should do that. That's a good one. 5-star review, and then you can say what you like.
I think you should only review podcasts on the wrong places. So like on the Tesco's website where it's like your garden peas or something. And you can say, I've read this terrible podcast. Mentioned peas once.
That's viral marketing.
This week, we're talking about the four confessions that most caught our eyes.
Just some confessions. That caught our eyes. Just some confessions. That caught our eyes.
four confessions that have most caught our eyes. And number one, I run a medium Mastodon server. Since I started moderating the Trends Explore page by hand 2 years ago, prioritizing art, pets, nature, creativity and laughter, I've noticed a general shift in my instance. People are happier. The general feel is happier and I feel happier too. Okay, the reason I wanted to bring this one up is that loads of people in the replies just didn't know what it was talking about because they'd never heard of Mastodon. And it's like we've got the great split now happening in post-Elon Musk social media. And so the crowds are going off. That Mastodon is where all the nerds are going. So like if you want to sort of like just speak to people who know how to code, that's where they all are. It seems that all the arty writer types have disappeared off to Blue Sky. And that's got that kind of like 2010 whimsical Biscuits Ahoy Twitter seems to be over there. Although Biscuits Ahoy, of course, became a Nazi, but that's another matter. That's the story of all social media. We're missing one group. Oh, yeah, Threads. And like, I don't know who's on it, but there's just loads of people on it. I copied over all the Fessel tweets to Threads, and it's got like 77,000 followers there now.
Wow.
But I just don't know who they are. I can't make any sense of who they are, but there's a lot of people there. My theory is it's like, it's your aunt or something.
It's the Facebook. It's the Facebook of social media.
And I think there's a lot of accounts that are like just instantly created because of the Instagram follow through, as they call it.
Very specialised channel.
But it's been a big deal for me, the whole nonsense of like Elon Musk really making a mess of Twitter. And then what do you do next? Because I'm personally quite invested in Twitter working, even though it's now called X, because I've ended up building up a million follower account on it. And then you're a bit high and dry. And so you're sort of mucking around trying to make on these other networks. It's a right pain in the ass.
Are you personally on all three of those networks or are you just Fesshole?
I've got, you know, like token presence, but I can't be bothered to post. The one I'd be most tempted to post on is Blue Sky because it's like friends of mine are there, but also I can't be bothered.
It's the one that's most like Twitter, isn't it, basically?
Both in functionality and people, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say I've basically almost managed to recreate exactly how unhappy Twitter makes me in Blue Sky by just following the same people. It's very good to go, oh God, there's Nazis.
You've found the Blue Sky Nazis?
No, I found the people who monitor Nazis. That's like my weird little thing that I look at on social media is people who monitor Nazis and fascists. And then I sort of following them here. I'm like, why am I doing this? I'm not doing anything about it. I'm just sort of consuming anti-fascism as a sort of content. Yeah, I've managed to do that on Blue Sky as well, but I'm not on Threads because it's banned in the EU. So
what?
Was it banned in the EU, Threads?
No. I think what it was that when they launched, they didn't jump through some hoops to get it into the EU, but then they eventually did and it got an EU launch, I don't know, 2-3 months ago or something.
In which case I can happily join that as well. I can split my very sort of mediocre social media presence across, even thinner. I am on Mastodon as well, but it was a bit techie.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked it, but then also I didn't feel the need to go on it at all.
Well, the numbers on Mastodon is like, for Fessel, we've got 2,000 followers that are all replying now in machine code and COBOL and Fortran to every...
You found your people.
They are my people. I love them. The second confession that caught our eye this week, I'll read it out. One of the reasons I left my girlfriend was because she was controlling. The other reason was she put orange juice instead of milk on the cereal. Cocoa Pops and orange juice.
Well, that doesn't sound so bad. Chocolate orange.
Sounds delicious. I wanted to bring this one up because it was like basically something that I did for a bit in like my early 20s because I sort of mistakenly got the impression that this was like the healthier way to eat breakfast cereal and that somehow a pint of orange juice on top of your cornflakes is a healthier option than a pint of milk, sort of adding a ton of additional sugar. But it was Tropicana. I made sure it was good orange juice.
Yes, I think I remember you doing this. It was like a Swiss thing or something. The Swiss do this.
Yeah, I lived in a house with some colleagues for like a month. And they did it in there. And I thought, oh, these are sophisticated older, you know, they were probably like 35 when I was 25 or something. And I saw them as sophisticated older people who knew about things. And that was like the cool thing you must do.
That is very funny. When you meet a 35-year-old now.
Yeah, with their fucked up their lives, you think, looking up to them. One of these people I lived with, they had a, is the word Sufi or something? You know, they had like a spiritual advisor. you know.
Like a guru?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, maybe I should get a spiritual advisor. That sounds like it could be handy.
Could you get one for next week, for the next edition of this podcast? Could you bring with you your spiritual advisor?
Good content, yeah. For a while, I actually did the thing with Cocoa Pops and put yogurt on my cereal.
It's still in the vicinity of milk, isn't it?
Yeah, but it was like sweetened yogurt. And I was like, oh, this is much better for me than just putting a load of old milk on there. And it's like gloopy kind of Müller Corner stuff.
The proper Müller Corner with all the sort of like extra sweets in the corner. And they're just sort of...
Skittles.
Are we going to live with the dogs barking? Shall I just explain? That's Majel barking away because she's just so excitable. Maybe if I just let her into the room, she'll be less barky. I'll try that. Hang on. Okay, we've got Majel here. Come on, Majel.
Hey.
Little Majel.
What a cutie.
So that's little Majel. And Leonard's come in as well. And Leonard's, he's a big dog, so he's not one I can really lift up like little Majel here.
I find him unsettling because he's named after my dad.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's not true.
Ha.
That's not true. He's not named after your dad. Okay, David's name is David Leonard Stevenson. And so when me and Kat decided to get a dog, I thought it would be a wonderful tribute to Dave to name the dog after Dave. And obviously not do that naff thing of just calling your dog Dave kind of thing. So he became Leonard, which is a very sophisticated name for a dog. But it was never to mock you, Dave. It was never taking the piss. And it was a multiple tribute because it was like, not only is it a tribute to you, it's a tribute to Leonard Rossiter, Leonard Nimoy and Leonard Cohen, all the great Leonards, the four great Leonards.
Exalted company.
Yeah.
Well, the weird thing is Dave is a really good name for a dog.
Yeah, but it's an overdone joke, isn't it? You know, since that TV channel renamed themselves Dave, then it stopped being funny to name things Dave, didn't it? It ruined it. That TV channel fucks up your name, didn't it, Dave?
Indeed. That's why I named my son ITV.
But he was an absolute marketing masterstroke, them renaming it like that. I did some work for them. I built their bloody websites in, I don't know, 2006 or something, before they were called Dave. And they were just called something like, I can't even remember now. They had about 10 channels. They just had unmemorable names. Brilliant bit of marketing.
They were called Mr. David. They were called David Cameron.
Was he involved? He might have been, wasn't he?
Was he? No way.
No, he's involved in, was it ITV? He was involved with some TV company, wasn't he?
Well, he's a very rich man, so I imagine he's involved in a lot of things. Not all of them good.
But shall we move on to the third one, which caught our eyes, or my eye, if we're going to be accurate this week? Shall I read it out, David?
Yes.
Working from home means I wank pretty much daily. Half of the time, I don't even want to, but I just can't pass up the opportunity when I am at home, alone, with the internet and peace and quiet. Help! It's not asking for a hand here, you know, it's just saying help this poor human. It doesn't specify gender, but we know it's a man. But
he's going to die of dehydration.
I remember when I was working with you, like, years ago that...
Wait, where's this going?
This is not going to us having a mutual masturbation session. Fesshole nights where we confess all that stuff. I just remember when we were doing that bit, we were writing jingles. We wrote, for some reason, because you're trying to churn out sort of songs. Like, we wrote loads of songs that were kind of not really needed as well.
Mm-hmm.
Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, I do remember. I've got them on my hard drive.
Nice. You won't have this one because we never recorded this one. But I remember you wrote most of the lyrics to it. And I remember what it was. And I think I wrote the opening line, which was, I've got a sore cock from the wanking that I've done. And then you wrote the rest of it, which was like, you started singing along going, I wanked out the moon and I wanked out the sun, something.
I see it.
Then you finished it with the line, and then on the seventh day, I wanked out my only son.
Oh my God, well.
Just thought I'd bring that up.
How prophetic.
Does it ring any bell?
It sounds like a Lord of the Dance kind of riff, doesn't it? So I wanked in the morning when the world was begun. I wanked out the moon and the stars and the sun. I wanked,
that's what it would be. Do you remember you wrote one which was something like, Mrs. Crowley, your son can't come round anymore. He's sinister and prowly.
I remember that one, but I thought that was you.
Oh, okay.
The one I remember very notably is, there's a hole in my cock that lets the tears out, which has an excellent Star Trek video with it.
Who was responsible for those lyrics?
That was entirely you, but I did enjoy that. I'm crying now just thinking about it.
Yeah, it's a shame that stuff was lost. The this is a massive digression. I looked up the other day because that was work we did for a company called Comedy Box that lasted about a year or something. And I typed in the word Comedy Box into my Gmail search the other day. And we were invited to some kind of night in like 2009. And the compare of it was that Mark, someone or other, who now presents GB News.
Wow.
Like, oh, God. He was just a comedian on the circuit at that point rather than a horrible thing that he's become.
He hadn't grasped that sort of that grift yet.
Not yet. Not yet. Right, okay. I'm going to give you one more that caught my eye this week. You ready, Dave?
I'm ready. Do you want me to read it or do you want you to read it?
I'm going to read it.
You read it.
I'll read it and then it's going to lower the energy because it's quite bad. My mother-in-law has dementia and it makes me incredibly sad. We argued many times about how bad Brexit would be and she voted for it. Everything I told her would happen, has happened, and I am robbed of the I told you so moment. It annoys me every time I see her. Is this one we just can't react to because it's just too grim?
No, I mean, it makes me think, my mum obviously got dementia and I think it robbed her of a real kind of, I mean, she's passed away now, but she missed out on a real kind of manic episode of politics that she would have been totally in her element on before all the dementia stuff. She was the kind of person who was writing, she was writing letters to George Osborne to tell him how to fix the economy. And she would write like satirical poems to like the Home Office about immigrants and things. She was really a peculiar character. And to see her miss out on Trump and the current Tories, it's a sad moment, really. Although God knows where she'd have gone with it.
You were saying she's basically a GB News viewer, but before GB News existed. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't even know what her opinion on Nigel Farage would be, because on the one hand, she was like fully on board with a lot of things he says. But on the other hand, she would have found him ghastly and hated him as well. So very peculiar.
Yeah, my dad got the old dementias too, and he's gone now. But it did remind me of my dad, just thinking about like, I don't really... The dementia kicked in for him like before Brexit really took hold. But I think he would have loved Brexit. It would have been right up his street because like kind of his opinions beforehand were like things like he was a natural climate change denier. And he would come up with those kind of like back of the fag packet kind of arguments going, well, you know, if you have an ice cube in your glass of whiskey and then it melts, it's not like you get more whiskey. So therefore, how can the glaciers be melting and how can the sea levels rise?
Well, aren't they made of whiskey?
Yes, more whiskey.
I think that this fest is sort of based on a slightly a fallacy, though, because if they were still with us, we wouldn't be able to say I told you so, because they would have another argument right now on the back of a fag packet.
Yeah. It's like no one has come round, have they, on this argument? Do you know anyone who's like really changed their opinion?
Not unless they've done it really publicly for likes. But I think my mum would be like, she'd built one of her effigies or whatever.
But built an effigy of Brexit, of Europe, of...
I think Ursula von der Leyen or something.
Those Eurocrats who are stopping Great Britain reach full potential.
God knows, yeah. Stuff like that. Putting down the small business owner.
Anyway, good luck to that person with that fest. And I hope it's...
Yeah, it's a rough thing to go through.
It's a rough thing. It's rough business dementia. It's not like there's a... good bit at the end, is there? It doesn't get better. It's like stick in there. No, it's bad. It's bad. It's bad stuff. So let's move on to ones that just make us laugh.
Jarring shift in tone.
I've got the gear stick going.
U-turn on the M1. It just made us laugh.
It just made us laugh. Okay, I've got four that made us laugh. I mean, they're ones that made me laugh. I mean, you are welcome, Dave, to write some of this document.
Yeah, maybe I should. Maybe I should.
Maybe you should. Yeah. We could do this differently where you write half of it or say. But anyway, ones that just made me laugh. Right. I was doing Scooby-Doo impressions whilst walking down the street because I didn't think anyone was in earshot. There was someone right behind me.
And when he pulled their mask off, it was...
Those pesky kids.
I mean, do you do that? I find myself singing and then get caught singing by people. That's mine.
Yeah.
But what I also find is that the singing is usually weirdly connected to something I'm actually secretly thinking about.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm accidentally giving away my inner thoughts. Which I don't like.
Yeah, yeah. Just walking around the house going, I must tidy up, but I don't want to.
I'm going to this meeting, but I want to kill you.
You got any good impressions, Dave?
No, basically no.
That was pretty good. It's a solid impression. It's the one impression you can do from the 70s that you're still allowed to do because
he
hasn't been outed as a nonce or something as of yet.
Right. So I'm doing this bedtime story with my son, or I just finished doing it, and it's a spy. It's like a spy thriller. Well, it's about supervillains, but like every character is like a different nationality. And like two main characters are Russian, and I have to do a Russian accent, and I cannot do it. And they sound absolutely wild. You have to come with me. I'm Russian now. It's so weird. It's like a Russian ninja. But luckily, he doesn't know what a Russian sounds like, so it's okay.
Your Russian's okay.
That was Sean Connery in Hunt for Red October.
Doesn't every dad just love doing that bit, doing the voices for like the kid? And they go, oh, yeah, I could have a job doing this. I could read kids' stories. Do you have that little fantasy for a little bit when you're doing it?
Not the fantasy that I could get a job doing it, but I do really enjoy doing it. And you get to do a bit of performance. I was going to say the worst one we've had was the book that had 12 Australian characters because I don't have 12 different Australian accents.
You give them different backstories where like, well, this one's actually from Jamaica. I mean, he's living in Australia now, but, you know, he moved, didn't he?
It was one's very small Australian man.
Hello, Australia. I'm from Australia.
That is what my Australian accent sounds like, to be fair.
That was my Pam Ayres, I think.
That was a good Pam Ayres.
I can normally do it, but I'm laughing too much from my mouth. Won't do the shape now that allows me to do it.
Or you'll read my poetry kind of thing.
Perfect. 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 Let's do the poetry half hour.
The impressions of people who don't get impressions done of them anymore.
She's still alive, Pam Ayres, apparently.
She is, yeah.
She is.
Yeah, more power to her elbow.
Okay, number two in the ones just made me laugh. I look after social media accounts for a consumer brand. If I get messages that are irritating or the person's profile suggests that they are a dick, I respond in the most AI, that is artificially intelligent sounding way possible in the hope that they piss off.
I don't know that it would work because I've got a colleague whose surname, basically he's got a very robotic sounding name. He sounds like it's a made up name that you would give to a robot.
Mr. Robot.
Engineer, in fact.
Okay.
Like basically people assume he is an AI and they just give him more and more work to do when they're chatting with him. They assume it's some kind of chatbot. It's very weird.
So that's not really working for him, is it? That he's not making people go away with that. Yeah.
Well, he's not trying to. It's just his name. He's a nice, helpful man. So maybe this isn't working for this guy either. But
what I thought about it, yeah, was that, you know, we are now apparently living through this extra version of the Industrial Revolution where tons of things are being replaced in a crappy way with AI. And it's based on the assumption that then the people using those services don't change, and they will change because they know they're using AI, as evidence in this. And it was like the other day I was reading about this like great study of like they put some AI into the local tube station and they were going, oh, we can now tell when there's someone on the track, for example. But it's just going to be awful. It's going to be just bloody awful because it means that they can then sack the person who is looking if there's anyone on the track. And obviously you've got the lost jobs. There's going to be a whole level of stuff of like, once people understand what the AI is doing, you'll be like, okay, oh, right, if I wear a stripy shirt or something, it's not going to be picked up by the AI.
There's a specific thing, wasn't there? Do you remember when there was the facial recognition you could put makeup on in a certain way and it would glitch out the cameras?
The much funnier version of that was like, you could like wear like a T-shirt just saying car. And the word car would overemphasize it. It would go, it's a car.
Oh my God, that's great.
Yeah. Down with AI.
Definitely. Definitely. Funnily enough, the twist is that the first half of this was written by an AI and we're just revealing it now.
At number three, in ones that made me laugh, there was this one that said, soon after I got my two dogs, I trained them to shit right at the doorway of my local conservative club. They now do this most days, morning and evening. By the end of their, and possibly my life, they will have crapped there around 5,904 times, conservative estimate.
See what you did there.
I didn't do it. I just read it out.
You have two dogs.
Oh, yes, I do. I do. I don't know where the Conservative Club is. So that's my excuse. They're probably around somewhere, living in where I do. But yeah, it's not me. But the bit I noticed about it was like it got people doubting on the maths. But I've worked it out. The maths works. Assuming 2 craps a day for about 8 years, it comes out around nearly 6,000. And that's assuming a dog lasts about 8 years. And like dogs can last like 8 to 14 years, depending on their size. So from this, we can reverse engineer that they're large dogs. So they're big shits that are on the doorstep of the Conservative Office Club.
I mean, if he joined them, he can make it 9,000 poos.
There's always an opportunity for more turds you can put in. It's a shame it's illegal to send shit through the post, isn't it? It's ruined my life anyway.
My small business. Then once again, the EU. Damn you. I think you probably can send it through the post if you wrap it securely enough.
Right, okay. It's just a problem when I send it through the prepaid envelope back to the Rishi Sunak office.
They say the Rishi Sunak factory. We've got a bad one. We have to return it.
At number 4, and ones that just amused me a little bit, tiny bit of amusement, like the world's smallest micro smile. Like, don't expect big laughs here. Okay. My wife likes to keep my pubes trimmed short. She says it looks better and makes giving BJs nicer. I keep a few stragglers long towards my bum hole to make sure I always have some of nature's dental floss.
Lovely.
I just never occurred to me to do this. Well, I mean, obviously I've pulled hairs out of my head occasionally and had a go, but it's just maybe my hair's just too weak to use it as dental floss, you know. And the way to do it is obviously a fingernail. That's the good thing to get crap out of your teeth, Shawnee.
I thought you meant with the blowjobs. Okay, fine, right.
Well, you thought that... What did you think?
I don't know. It's just fingernails work. And there's like, what part of the blowjob shouldn't involve fingernails?
You've got to grasp firmly. You've got to leave fingerprints and like nail holes. You've basically got to play it like a recorder. The nails get holes into the dick and then you can...
Try and play a merry tune.
Shall we move on?
Let's move on.
Shall we play a jingle?
Yeah.
Let's put you on the spot, Dave. Write a jingle now for a section called Highest Rated.
Highest rated, highest rated. It's the highest rated.
It's going to go in every episode now. Brilliant. At number 3 in the highest rated this week on Fesshole with 12,000 favs is I'm a surgeon. I had to amputate a testicle. I went to cut the patient's left testicle. The whole operating room screamed at me to stop and that it was the right one to be amputated. I said, gotcha, just kidding. Ha ha. I wasn't kidding. I nearly cut off the wrong bollock.
What about if you say, they say, oh, it's the right one to be amputated, so I should cut it off.
One of the things I really enjoyed about this was that someone got like 250 favs for being a pedant about it. And like Peter Lucas... You're out there and I'm naming you. He said, who would say amputate a testicle? It's an orchidectomy. Only limbs can be amputated. 250 favs for that. They were going, didn't happen because doctors do not amputate testicles. They wouldn't do that. But I looked it up. I went to the British Association of Urological Surgeons and I found numerous citations where doctors talked about amputating testicles. They absolutely use more than one term. They sometimes say amputation. They sometimes say the word that's really hard, orchidectomy.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you just informally talk about things when you work. When you're cutting testicles off all day long, you know, always.
You're cutting balls off all day long. You just end up with slang for it, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Had he bollocked him?
Oh, chop off your loopers. You come in here for your bit of a choppy chop loop loop.
Are we sort of talking about someone operating out of a back alley now? Just need your testicles removed?
There are backstreet testicle removers.
Are there?
Well, yeah, because there's that whole kind of business where you get sort of like quite strange men who get sexually excited by the idea of amputation and removal of genitalia. And occasionally it will get into the papers because... they get arrested for performing backstreet dick and ball removals.
I was going to say, surely that as a sexual kink, it's something you can only perform a maximum of twice.
Thank you for talking me out of it, because I was lined up. I didn't think. The thing about the pointless pedantry, that I just wanted to mention this, that is like the thing that's wound me up literally today, was that my CD player, yes, I'm still stuck somehow in the 1950s with my metal plastic CDs. Anyway, my CD player has stopped ejecting discs. And so it's sort of like it's transformed itself from a machine that can play any music into a very specific art project that converts electricity into the first, into the performance of the first Sisters of Mercy album. And I sort of like mentioned this on the old social medias, and I just got message after message, people going, you've got to put a paperclip in the eject hole. You've got to put a paperclip. You've got to put a paperclip in the eject hole. There's no fucking eject hole, you fucking bastards. Not all CD players have one. And that was my growl at the world today, that I wasn't asking for advice. The internet always gives you fucking advice from a position of not knowing the full story. And the full story is that the Sisters of Mercy made three great albums and you should listen to them.
And I think I remember you talking before about the experience of streaming music being, it doesn't stop.
It never stops.
You start wanting to listen to something nice and then you have too much of the thing. And now you've got too much of the Sisters of Mercy first album.
Yeah, it doesn't stop. It just, it comes at you. A really good feature of physical music, of like albums, of CDs, of cassettes, is they play and they stop. And that silence at the end when they stop is the most intense bit of the musical experience, where you get to consider, you enjoy the moment of silence, and the song still plays in your head and it's wonderful. And that has completely been destroyed by streaming. But of course I use streaming, it's great.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it?
It's brilliant. Brilliant. Everything you've ever heard of, just sort of put on away, it's great. But, you know, it's quite fun to still muck around with CDs, because they're like 50p in the local charity shops, and it's something to do, isn't it? You know, scoot around, see what you can find. Right, has that stayed on subject?
Yeah, I think so, successfully, yes.
It was like, don't chop your bollocks off. Okay, at number two, with the, so it's equal kind of second place actually in the section that we are calling the highest rated, is I'm embarrassed to tell people what I do for work. I do night duty at a graveyard and I spend 90% of my shift telling goths to stop shagging on the gravestones. They always look like they work in CEX, the computer game shop, and they have no shame. If you do this, please stop.
He's kind of putting it out on social media now to stop the goths from shagging on the gravestones. Not enough in a physical way.
I thought I'd bring this one up also because, like, very, very occasionally I will edit things that come through the submissions. And basically I edited this one not to change that much, but just that as it came through, it just managed to have the word fat in it about five times. And I just thought, if I stick this out on Fessel, it'll just be everyone, quite rightly, of course, being, this is just fat phobia. So that's a bit of insider information.
Yeah.
I removed the fat phobia from it.
He's doing night duty at a fat graveyard.
That is Fight Club, isn't it? Sort of like loading up the fat to make candles, whatever it was, bombs.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Stop shagging on the fat gravestones.
You've never had sex on a gravestone, Dave?
No, I think it would be cold.
It would be. I've been in a graveyard today, actually.
Sorry, I mean, that shouldn't laugh, but...
I walked the dog earlier and I wandered into the East Finchley Graveyard Cemetery as like just a bit of a diversion. And as you do, you start reading the gravestones. And Kat, my partner, pointed one out. She'd say, oh, that's an interesting name. It was something like Vince Cheeseman or something like that. And it said he was a musician. And we Googled him and he turned out to be the keyboardist in The Crazy World of Arthur Brown.
Wow.
That was pretty exciting. And then I turned around, and this is no word of a lie, I turned around and I read the next almost opposite grave, and it was Mel Appleby from Mel and Kim. This is not a joke. She was right there, dead, under the ground. There's a little celebrity corner of East Finchley Cemetery. They're facing each other. It's like that thing where you go, oh, they're up in heaven together, Kim Appleby and the keyboard player from The Crazy World of Arthur Brown, jamming out, respectable, mashed up with fire or something.
I'm just enjoying that, the idea of you as a sort of celebrity name dropper. You never guess whose grave I saw the other day. Smaller than you'd think, but very down to earth.
There's no depth I wouldn't go to in celebrity name dropping. So, yes, that's me. So at number one in the biggest ones, the biggest stories, the biggest action on this account this week, at 22,000 favs is this one. Over to Dave.
Okay, here we go. 5 years ago, two blokes laughed at my 8-year-old autistic son in a Little Chef for the fluffy jumper of his mum's that he wore to be comfy travelling. Saw them get in a plumber's van. Left a Google review saying they came to, quote, shat in my loo and didn't flush. Review still live. Not sorry.
I am amused by the concept of cyber sabotage, and apparently there's, what's the word, acceptable victim in this place kind of thing. You know, we're allowed to shit up this guy's life because he's done a bad thing.
He laughed, impossibly.
Have you ever done any cyber sabotage, Dave?
I once left a bad review for a shop that gave me very bad service, and then I got so paranoid that I changed my name on the review and then kind of lived in fear for a couple of weeks that somehow they would know it was me and find me.
How was the service bad?
They were fixing my bike. A bit fell off. I went back in. They wanted to charge me fitting an extra bit on. I said I wouldn't pay for it, and they started screaming at me that I was a thief, and they banned me from the shop.
Oh, no.
So it was a very weird experience.
But you got the last laugh by screwing up their SEO.
By slightly lowering their Google review and then being frightened of the little man from the shop being angry with me again.
I was trying to scratch my brain for anything that I've ever done. And the one that came to mind, because like you're talking about name dropping. And so my celebrity friend, Ben Goldacre. Ben Goldacre is the guy who used to write some column in The Guardian about bad science. Of course, you know who he is. Anyway, one day he'd written one of his other books and he messaged me going, oh, my new book's out. Can you give it a review? And I'm like, of course I'll give it a review, and went straight onto Amazon and just did a piss take review going, the font is excellent and the spelling's really good and stuff like that. You know, just some nonsense rubbish to make him laugh. And then sent it to him and he was just like, Rob, can you just not?
Oh.
Because like the first review is going to set the tone. And if this just turns into a bunch of your idiot beatard friends, beaten friends, just doing comedy reviews, you actually could actually kill my career.
Oh, my God.
So it's like, oh, okay, I'll take it down. I think I could took it down. It was years ago anyway, yeah.
The cyber sabotage thing reminds me of, I think I've mentioned this colleague to you before, but he used to be in a team that did like explainers and fact boxes. And when he was on another publication's website, when they would have a little box that said, is this helpful or unhelpful? He would always vote unhelpful to sabotage that team invariably.
Clicking the unhappy button as you walk out of Dixon's. How was this experience? Sad face.
Not the saddest face, but just disappointed face on a Tesco till. Is it my imagination, but the Tesco till voice is Rishi Sunak, right? There isn't a Tesco local to me.
Do an impression.
Put your items in the bag. Hello, it's me, Rishi Sunak. Put your items in the bagging area. I don't know. This is a very sort of perky voice, basically.
It's time for a section that we like to call a non-opin. Play the jingle.
Anonopin. 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 Anana, 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 anonopin.
Okay, so Anonopin is the sister account of Fasshole where people submit and rate opinions. It's basically not as popular, but not as popular. It's not as popular as Fasshole, but I really, really like it because I just like opinions. Some of the ones that caught my eye this week include the first one, which is there should be a single subscription screening service at a reasonable price. At the moment, hardly anyone watches the shows that critics love or win awards because nobody can afford to sign up to 20 different services. It's reached the point that I'm back to buying DVDs. And I just wanted to say, I actually really like, I've been mentioning CDs earlier, I really like buying DVDs because it's just this cheap hobby you can have going to charity shops and getting stuff like for 33p. They cost nothing. You get interesting extras and you end up watching some films that you wouldn't normally think of watching. It's not to say that I don't have every single streaming service too, but I really quite like a DVD.
Yeah, I like a DVD too. I've started doing it. Basically, during lockdown, as you know, my wife likes to buy a lot of things. And that includes DVDs. So I ripped all of the DVDs and put them onto a drive in the house, which we still don't watch them.
No.
But they're there. But also you can add to your kind of own personal streaming service.
Can you share this streaming service? Like, can you add remote users to it?
Yes.
Like, can I log in?
Yes, you can. Yeah, I could do that.
well, maybe we should do that. Yeah, yeah. And I can not watch those DVDs too.
Exactly so. They're not there to be watched. I use Plex, which is, I think, pretty common that people use. But the developers at work got competitive with each other. Each started to do their own streaming service based on their own DVDs.
I've been working my way through. I mean, I've done most of the Hitchcock films on DVD. At the moment, I'm working my way for a big pile of Woody Allen films, which is obviously problematic. But what's the one I watched the other night? I watched Interiors, which is the one he made after Annie Hall. And basically nearly tanked his own career because had this massive, massive hit with Annie Hall. And then the film he followed it up with didn't include the two things that people kind of expected at the time for a Woody Allen film. Because it didn't include Woody Allen and it didn't include any jokes. But it's kind of watchable in a Mike Lee makes a depressing drama about rich New York people.
I don't know that much about Woody Allen. I actually had assumed that every single one of his films was a comedy.
Afraid not. Afraid not, Dave.
An uncultured lout.
Well, you know, he basically saw himself as someone who comedy was his route in because he did stand-up comedian and he wrote comedy. But one of the things I think he said was like, he's like, if you only do comedy, you're left at the children's table in entertainment. You get to play with the bigger toys and with a bigger game if you do some serious films. But I don't think it's his serious films that anyone really loves, is it? I mean, they're all right, but they're not sleeper.
I guess you win the Oscar for the bit where somebody dies of cancer or something. And it's not funny.
Oh, sorry.
It's not funny.
I'm not meant to laugh. Okay.
No.
Opinion two is that people who say that Britpop was rubbish are missing the point. It was effectively the soundtrack to the last time our country truly felt great about itself. When Britpop means Britpop.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's definitely a good thing when our country feels great about itself. There's never been any bad things happen when that goes on.
Why this spun me out a bit of this opinion was like, I just think it's quite funny about how Britpop is remembered now. And it's so heavily associated with the New Labour project and Tony Blair, possibly because of all that invites into Number 10 stuff. But really, time-wise, it was the soundtracks to the John Major years. And like Tony Blair came in, he won in 97. Yeah. Basically, you had Tony Blair come in and then 3 months later, Oasis released Be Here Now, which was the death of Britpop.
So Blair basically killed Britpop, another crime to be laid at his door.
He put the stake through the heart. He did. It was a sort of fascinating project, that whole New Labour pop music thing, because it was all down, well, it was partly down to the fact that Blair was in a band in the 70s, a student band called Ugly Rumours. And another member of that band was a man called Mark Ellen, who was like quite a well-known magazine person. Like he edited things like Q magazine and stuff. And so that was the sort of link of New Labour into the world of pop music.
Do you think Keir Starmer's going to do something similar with a musical trend right now? He's going to associate with the cool celebrities of the moment.
Who would they be?
I don't know any celebrities. I really asked the wrong person to be asking the question. Or maybe I'm the right person because I don't know anything.
As the father of teenage kids, it's like they're not, you know, yes, they do like music, but it's your Twitch streamers, it's your YouTubers.
I was going to say, is he going to invite Mr. Beast to number 10?
I hope so. And like Mr. Beast can run the economic policy of the country by going, we've got 1,000 single mums to chase this bread roll or something. They all got bread rolls.
Benefits are him just turning up at your house with like £3,000.
It could be. Opinion number three. Guys who shave at the gym are almost certainly on a register of some sort.
That is a weird thing to do. Or is it? Are you going to disagree with your controversial opinion?
Okay, I have shaved in the gym. I haven't done it for a few years, but I would do it like in the shower, like a private cubicle shower where my shame was not witnessed by other people. I wouldn't do it by the sink where everyone's there. And in the gym I use, there are signs up just going, fuck off with your shaving. And there was a guy, they say, just please don't shave it.
Right, it's very attitude there.
Yeah, yeah. But there was a guy in the other day shaving in front of the big mirror, and I was just like, can't say anything. But
there's something performative about it, isn't it?
But surely it's just functional, isn't it? You need to shave because you're going to a meeting or something.
But you don't need to do it in the gym. Like, there's people at work who clean their teeth as well, and that's another weirdly, look at me, I'm very busy. I have to clean my teeth at work.
Yeah, I'd forgive that. When I worked in an office with you, I had like a little kit of toothpaste and stuff like that and a razor, because there'd be times we'd be like in the office and then we'd be expected to go to some corporate thing in the evening and you had to sort of like sort your shit out rather than just turning up after the day looking like dog shit.
Oh, yeah. I don't mean like, oh, yeah, you have to tidy yourself up for something special, but to be there literally every day, like cleaning your teeth. It's quite weird. And maybe they're showing off, just look how dirty my teeth get in a day through this hard work that I've done.
It is a sign of manliness, isn't it? It's like the dirtier in the day your teeth are.
I've eaten a lot of mud and now time to cut loose.
The most irritating thing I've seen recently in my gym was there's a little sauna bit. I mean, it's tiny. You can get like three people in there. It's a tiny little hot room. And I went in there and there was a bloke in there and he had a Bluetooth speaker. And he was playing, he'd brought in his own like new age wishy-washy drone music to play in the sauna. You know, the shit you get when you go to a spa. He was like, I want that shit with me at all times, even though this place doesn't do it. And I'm going to give it to everyone. And I was just horrified by this. And I was just like, I was in the sauna for about 2 minutes. I was just getting really, really sort of angsty about it. And so eventually I just left the sauna and closed the door. And then I put my head back and went, is that really necessary?
That told him.
And then I went off and swam angrily for 45 minutes whilst going, I hope to God he's not there when I come back and I get caught in some awful confrontation that I can't cope with.
But he would do the same thing and just stick his head back and going, yes, it was necessary.
This is my calming music. You just see me when I'm angry.
It's very much got an air of the teenagers on the bus with their phones, hasn't it? Playing the loud music and like, well, I, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You said three people. Maybe the other person was really into it.
The capacity for three people. That was like to give you the scale of the sauna. Only two people in this story.
Well, that's super awkward. Maybe it wasn't even his speaker. Someone else had left it in there and he was...
Oh, no. I gave this guy a hard time and he was just like, I'm only... It was there when I came in. I'm only... Oh, it's meant to be.
He thought it was yours. And he's just awkwardly trying not to storm out.
It's just completely unacceptable, isn't it? The idea, I mean, as you said, kids on the bus, whatever, just wear some bloody headphones, you know, if only because, you know, if you're making content, you're going to get echo if you're broadcasting it. Be a media professional, kids.
Exactly so. The worst thing I've seen, actually, and it's not really a gym thing, but it is an office thing, is there's someone I sit near who eats a full meal at lunchtime off china plates and then doesn't wash them up.
Too much at once. We've got to explore the first half, then the second half. They eat
a meal.
Yeah. What kind of meal?
The one I've seen them eat was a pasta with a ragu kind of sauce. But I think the other one is a gravy that they've had, some kind of meat and gravy on a kind of quite a nice china plate. Which is, you know, mostly you're supposed to sit furtively at your desk and just stuff your face from a little tupperware box or something and then just sort of push it back to one side and then just carry on happily through the day and into the next day with this sort of slightly festering crockery.
It's weird Lord Fauntleroy kind of like rich people pretend behaviour, surely. Kind of like turning up at the office with your china plate, doing your full meal and then not tidying up because your nanny can tidy up.
It's a creative person. It's one of the creatives. So I think it's, I'm just too busy thinking up great ideas.
But anyway, so yeah, they're straight in the bin. They are in the pin bin.
That should be a good section.
The pin bin, yeah. I did register it once on Twitter and then lost it a day later. Somehow got banned.
Elon Musk got it.
Yeah, yeah, fuckers. Right. Opinion number four. Film studios should be allowed to make one sequel, one remake and one prequel to an original film. Any more than that and the copyright on the whole IP becomes free to use. We don't need another version of Bad Boys or Fast and Furious.
I think the Fast and Furious films are supposed to be getting better, aren't they? Every single one. I don't know if I can agree with that.
Do you watch them?
No, not a single one. The first one. I saw the first one. It was okay. It was pretty bad, so I imagine they're all right by now.
Okay, I'm going to give you my extreme take on this, and that's like film studios should be allowed to make zero sequels, zero remakes, and zero prequels to an original film.
Why is it you think that?
Because, like, you watch a movie and you go on a journey. It's a roller coaster ride, and it's sort of like you should be able to go into a movie with knowing nothing, and at the end, whoosh, which have come out the other side and you've been brain splattered with this kind of extraordinary story experience. But As soon as you get into a sort of sequel, prequel kind of thing, it's like, well, if it's a prequel, we know what happens right at the end because they turn into that story. So all your Jeopardy's buggered because, like, oh, they're not going to die because they've got to, you know, when the story's new, everything's up to play for. As soon as you've got to, like, keep Sherlock Holmes alive, it's like, well, of course he's going to solve the mystery, you know?
I'm going to disagree in my case to disprove you is, unfortunately, Smallville,
yeah,
the TV show about Superman, where you know he's going to become Superman. But I thought they did an excellent job in that he's basically, he's got three best friends. One best friend is Lex Luthor, who you know in the final thing is his ultimate enemy, but he's his best friend. So you've got this tension.
So we've got sort of Shakespearean dramatic irony going on.
Oh, clever.
What is going to happen to this guy? And then there's two other people, and they're never in any of the Superman things. So you know something bad is going to happen to them, but you don't know what. And I just thought that was quite an effective thing. And then, of course, you know, oh, well, he incidentally happens to have an S on his chest or something one time. And that's like, oh, that's how that started, which is a bit rubbish. But this sort of thing about what happens to the people is quite interesting.
Yeah, I'm not really saying you shouldn't ever do it, but I'm saying that it does write people into a corner and it can be a problem.
In extremes, you get like the Star Wars stuff where you just like have endless revisiting the same thing.
Yeah, and like the Star Wars, like imagine if the Star Wars was just one movie and it's a very, very perfect little story that just does like your classic hero's quest, the little sort of like small town boy, he saves the princess and manages to fuck off the evil wizard or whatever it is, you know? And the story's done. And then next episode they're like, oh, I'm your father. And it's like, no, you're not. What a load of bollocks.
Uncanny impression. Oh, I'm your father, Luke.
No! That's impossible.
I don't even mind like the first sequel, but then once you sort of get that law of diminishing returns, it really shows why you shouldn't be doing it, where you suddenly got, and then the man who was at the corner shop in one thing is like, he's got his own TV show now.
And it breaks, it just like, you know, it's like stories can have a whole kind of like allegorical kind of meaning to them. And then when it turns into world building, it just kills all the allegory because it's like we're in Animal Farm 2 and they've franchised the farm. There's all farms all over the country now run by animals and it's not about communism anymore, is it? It's just a weird alternative universe with animal farms.
Yeah, that's true. That is interesting, actually. You do lose the kind of metaphor.
That's where Orwell fucked up. Yeah, it kills the metaphor. Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say, it counts to that. TV. TV's quite good. TV shows.
Yeah, there are some good TV shows. I accept there's some good TV shows.
That's QED.
Right. Okay, best comments. Dave, you're going to write a jingle on the spot for best comments.
Best comments vessel. Best comments vessel. .mp3. Play the MP3 now. It's playing. Can you hear it? Best comments.
Come as a vessel. These are the best. Come as a vessel. Come as a vessel. Doobie doobie.
Ooh, best come as vessel on my arc for bis far format. Thought you might enjoy that reference, but no, just silence from you, Dave.
It's just the delay on the mic. You know how it is.
Okay, best comments, right. The first was, I've recently started a new job at a primary school, which I love. However, it is a Church of England school and I have 666 tattooed on my leg. And I'm scared for summer to start as it will be on show and I'll probably lose my leg.
Or your job. The comment is, change it to 1666, the year the Church of England adopted the Common Book of Prayer. You'll probably get a promotion. It's from John C. It's a pretty good one.
Not John the Baptist.
I mean, this is my comment, which is basically stand upside down because it's 999. It's an emergency.
All the fabs for your comment.
No, thank you. Change it to 888 and say you were a big fan of CFAX subtitles back in the day. That's a good one. That'll go down and work with the kids. That's from Cloud Totally.
First number two. I showed the class bully how to play Donkey Kong properly and we became friends. I ended up showing him how to do maths like trig and percentages, etc. He changed. However, when it came to the exams, everything I showed him was wrong and he failed beyond belief. Back of the net.
Yeah, that's cold. So the comment is, pretty sure teaching someone trig wrong is a sin. It's a sign?
Is it one that doesn't work because of when reading it out, it's only a visual, it's a visual pun?
It's a visual pun. So yes, show me a yes. This is from Draconacticus, who's put me in a very awkward verbal position.
This is why I said you read that. No, it wasn't why I said you read this one out. Right, okay, fest number three. I just don't do my job anymore and nobody has noticed. I work from home and 2 days last week, I didn't even bother turning on my laptop. An average week, I spend 2 to 3 hours doing actual work and I legitimately don't know how nobody has clocked this. I'm not even trying to hide it.
The comment is, Sunak, isn't it? Very face subtle.
It is. It always is a winner going, oh, I see Boris has logged on, something like that.
My God.
Oh, is that Boris's missus? It's like just instant 5 million faps.
Satire.
Just say the word satire. Yeah. And then just sort of like throw your hands up like that and a Gaelic shrug. But, you know. Fest number four. 20 years ago on a building site, the ceiling tile fitters were a right bunch of twats. Everybody hated them. I took off the top of the pack of tiles and I drilled holes in hundreds of tiles using a 1 millimeter drill bit and then I replaced the top back. I would have loved to have been there when they found out.
Wow.
Bastards.
Comment is, nothing funny about erect tile dysfunction by Chris.
Boom tish.
That's a very good one.
It's an excellent pun. Now over to Dave for 20 excellent puns that you've pre-prepared.
Yes. Tile no doll for my headache. No, can't really do it. I did read it as a 1 meter drill bit, which would have made it quite an obvious bit of sabotage.
Oh, I've run out of energy, Dave. We're going to have to call this off.
Yeah.
I'm starting to die. And so that means we have to wrap up by saying our producer needs to tell us that we need to encourage listeners to subscribe, rate and review wherever they get their podcast. Dave, can you tell them this?
Our producer tells us we need to encourage listeners to subscribe, rate and review wherever they get their podcasts.
And to finish on a nice note, Fesshole isn't just horror. It can be good advice too. Anytime I am cranky or uncomfortable, it takes at least 30 minutes for me to remember the checklist. Am I hungry? Do I need a shit? Are my trousers too tight? Are my shoes on too tightly? 99% of the time, it's one of those causing it. I'm 42 and a member of the Bee Gees. No, that's all right.
42 and very wise. That's a good checklist.
It really is. It really is. It's like it works with little kids, you know, and it works with adults too.
It's exactly the thing. When you realise when you've got little kids, you're like, oh, actually, I should probably be treating myself this way as well. We go, are you okay? Do you need a snack? Are you all right?
That's it, isn't it? We need to parent ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Which hopefully means I'll be getting an Amstrad CPC for Christmas. Yay!
And he said he had no energy.
Right, should we just die now?
I think we should.
Bye!
Bye-bye.
That was a party political broadcast on behalf of Jo Swinson has lost her seat in Parliament Party.